Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in on tonight's program. We have a moment with Bob, also one of Kay's report cards, very brief one. As a matter of fact, I guess Kay's busy teaching students, right? Also, it appears that a Glenn Beck follower has been at work in the woods in Kentucky. We'll get to that in a little while. But let's start out right off the bat with a moment with Bob. It's time once again for another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. In the subject line tonight, Bob writes, "The Indifferent Enemy." Hey Mike, Sam Peckinpah's 1969 Western, The Wild Bunch, opens with William Holden leading his gang of outlaws into town to rob the railroad office of a payload of silver. The group is ambushed by a posse hired by the railroad company, resulting in a bloody shootout that kills off several of the gang. The surviving Wild Bunch rides out of town back to their hideout, where they meet up with another gang member, Sykes, played by Edmund O'Brien. Sykes asks what happened back at the town and is told, "They set it up." He replies with a sneer, "Who the hell is they?" Good movie. And a good question for all of us amateur historians and researchers. Who the hell are they? Who are the people behind the scenes pulling the strings? Who are the people who decree who shall live and who shall die? Who stands to gain from death and destruction? Who put our country on the road to empire and turned us into a rogue nation? Who owns America? Well, the textbook answer, the United States of America is a democratic republic owned by the people, powered by the will of the people, will only satisfy the terminally naive. Taking the lead from All the President's Men, follow the money. G. William Dornoff wrote in his article, or Domhoff wrote in his article, Wealth, Income, and Power, quote, "In terms of types of financial wealth, the top 1% of households in the U.S. have 36.7% of all privately held stock, 63.8% of financial securities, and 61.9% of business equity. The top 10% have 85 to 90% of stock, bonds, trust funds, and business equity, and over 75% of non-home real estate. Since financial wealth is what counts as far as the control of income-producing assets, we can say that just 10% of the people own the United States of America," end quote. The so-called old money that created dynasties, for the most part, came from old crimes and the proceeds from war. The patina of age refined this blood money and created the strange gentility of our ruling class. What new dynasties have been created from the crime of denying our health insurance claims? In 2007, the CEOs from seven health insurance companies received well over $1.2 billion in compensation. The CEO of Aetna, Ronald Williams, made $467,309.85 per week. Who the hell are they? You can call them the ruling class, the ruling elite, the fill-in-the-blank space before industrial complex, as in the military industrial complex, pharmaceutical industrial complex, security industrial complex, or simply the corporatocracy. The power of the corporatocracy transcends elections and national boundaries. It is the greatest political power in the world. A foreign Corporation, the British Petroleum Company, tried to get President Truman to use the CIA to overthrow Prime Minister Mossadegh of Iran, but Truman refused. In 1953, however, President Eisenhower acquiesced and the CIA embarked on its first covert operation against a foreign government, and Mossadegh was ousted. The next year, United Fruit Company, also known as Chiquita Banana, pressured Eisenhower to use the CIA to overthrow Jacobo Arbenz Guzman, the democratically elected president of Guatemala. And their will was done, and the corporatocracy trained death squads and maintained control. The President of the United States is the most powerful man in the world only to those who are historically illiterate. The corporatocracy has caused the deaths of millions. Through their deliberate actions, whole nations have been plunged into soul-killing poverty. They have polluted our air, land, water, and food. It is not an original idea, but the corporatocracy is a psychopath. And like a psychopath, it is completely indifferent to the destruction in its wake. The corporatocracy doesn't care about whether or not we get eaten alive by untreated cancer, or if the additives in our food cause cancer. They don't care if we lose our homes or die in a war they engineered. They don't care. Their indifference is maddening. It would be almost more palatable if they hated us. It would almost make sense then. But it's not personal. It's only business. The corporatocracy has never voluntarily stopped making money. They have been thwarted only when finally the people couldn't take it anymore and demanded that they stop. But that was in the previous century when Americans joined together and demanded fair wages, reasonable working conditions and hours, and basic civil rights. The only way to successfully fight the corporatocracy is for us to realize, again, that without our consent, without our labor, the corporatocracy's agenda will not proceed. When letters, phone calls, and emails to our elected representatives, bought and paid for by the corporatocracy, result in nothing, it's time to start doing things differently. When will we understand that the beginning of the solution starts with a national strike? Until then, we remain powerless because we have given our power away to people who have betrayed us. And we're too frightened to do anything about it. We're too frightened to demand anything because we might lose our job. But let us at least have the courage to ask questions. At least we can ask the beast what it is like to be the beast. From everywhere on the planet, whenever the American Empire brought hell on earth because it was good business, we should question them. From the blood-soaked earth of Southeast Asia to the rubble in Iraq, from the killing fields in Central and South America to a balcony of a motel in Memphis or the bullet-ridden kitchen pantry of a hotel in Los Angeles, we should ask them, what is it like to stand in absolute darkness with no stars above you and no cold capable of bothering you and not suffer the uncertainty that comes from feeling the presence of monsters, to know instead that you are the greatest of monsters, and that the shadows hide nothing more dangerous than yourself? And finally, ask them the same question put to the railroad baron in The Wild Bunch. How does it feel to be so goddamn right? Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. When I got that from Bob this evening, I thought, well, that would be a good way to start the program because, you don't know who you're fighting unless you can identify the enemy, unless we know who the enemy is. Now, I realize that to probably 99.9% of the people who listen to this program, Bob included, myself included, we know who the enemy is, the corporatocracy. We know who they is. Of course we do. Essentially, that's pretty much what this program's all about. But to have it articulated once again, and in a manner that only Bob Alexander can do it, I think it's essential to staying focused. Ooh. Don't you hate that term when it's used like that? Staying focused. The UN today was the scene of all kinds of craziness. It was very interesting to watch. Yesterday, not far from the UN in New York, there was a a council, a meeting on global climate change. A census worker has been murdered in Kentucky, hanged. What else have we got tonight? Oh, a little report from here in Georgia when we come back. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's getting rough. This portion of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. It is 21 past the hour. Here in the Atlanta metro area, that it's just been pummeled by rain for about. Kathy and I had a debate about this. I said it was a good 7 days. She said it was more like five. It just seemed like it went on forever. We finally had sunshine today, and what was odd, the rain has been in Atlanta for the better part of a week. Let's compromise. And prior to that, it was pretty cloudy where we were in North Carolina and South Carolina. It's been a couple of weeks up until today that we saw the sun. In the meantime, the sun crossed, so to speak, the autumnal equinox. And the light changes here in this part of the country quickly and fairly dramatically. So today when the sun came out, I think we were heading to Molly's kindergarten to pick her up, and I just all of a sudden I said, "Hey, does the light look different to you?" And she agreed, it was very different. Things have been hell in the metro Atlanta area. Now, I realize other sections of the country go through this on a regular basis. We do not have flooding in the Atlanta area. We simply don't. The city sits 1,000 feet above sea level. There are huge reservoirs, lots of lakes around here, but we don't have flooding. Atlanta begins in the Piedmont of the Appalachian Mountains, the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, if you will. And flooding is very unusual. The last time we had any flooding here, I think, was Hurricane... what hurricane was it? It was Hurricane something that blew into Atlanta years ago. But the death toll now is around 10, and in Metro Atlanta, I think 9 in Metro Atlanta, I think there was a young person killed in northern Georgia, drowned. But in just within the suburbs of Metro Atlanta, 9 people have been drowned, swept away by these horrendous rains and the resulting flooding. Watching on television, the video reports of people who have lost everything. And nobody here in the Metro Atlanta area has flood insurance. You just don't need it. Nobody gets flood insurance. It's ridiculous. Very few people live in a floodplain here. If you live in a floodplain, then you are advised to get it. But most people in Metro Atlanta, matter of fact, in most areas of North Georgia, do not live in a floodplain. So whatever damage has been done, and families have been just completely wiped out. I mean, when your house is inundated, it's kind of like what happened in Katrina on a much lesser scale. I'm not comparing what happened here to what happened in Katrina in Mississippi Gulf Coast by any stretch of the imagination. Some of the images however, of people struggling in neck-deep water or sitting on the roofs were reminiscent of Katrina, and it happened right here in Metro Atlanta. But no insurance, no way, and unemployment in the state is in double digits, and the state is bankrupt. The state of Georgia is essentially bankrupt. There's no money here, because when the Republicans finally took over the state for the first time since Reconstruction, about 4 years ago, the first thing they did was start slashing tax rates, destroying any attempt or any future attempt to collect revenue. As a result, the infrastructure in the Atlanta area, North Georgia, is just on the verge of collapse. The pictures of that you see when you go online, look at pictures of downtown Atlanta, Metro Atlanta, the pictures are very impressive and entertaining. I've watched the city grow over the past 38 years from a mid-sized southern town to this behemoth of almost 6 million people. But the pictures are deceptive. Atlanta and its environs, its suburbs, the 13-county area, is rotting from the inside because nobody, it's called deferred maintenance when you go to buy a house. Well, I didn't know the roof had a leak in it. Well, sir, that's deferred maintenance. the deferred maintenance that has been shuffled for the past 4 or 5 years under Republican control is now making itself manifestly obvious. Sewers collapsing, watershed management gone, sewage treatment plants that never had the deferred maintenance that they were supposed to have now dumping raw sewage into the Chattahoochee River, which is the main water source for Atlanta and downstream all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, all the cities and towns along the way in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. And Governor Sonny Perdue has reacted. And I'll tell you how he's reacted when we come back. Stay with us.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. 25 before the hour. So there's a real I'm not trying to minimize this or maximize it. A mini catastrophe here in the Metro Atlanta area. Waters have been receding now, yesterday and today, since we are not normally prone to floods. The drainage is fairly quick, but the damage and the death and the destruction has been done. And because nobody in the southeast, nobody in North Georgia has flood insurance, there's an awful lot of people who have been wiped out. Normally, the state would offer assistance, but the state of Georgia doesn't have any money. So Sonny Perdue, the governor of the state, according to news reports locally here, has been making what can only be described as desperate phone calls to Barack Obama. And according to reports here, their word, not mine, begging for federal assistance. If Obama declares the 17 counties that Sonny Perdue, the governor here, has declared a disaster area, or a state of emergency, whatever it is, if this area is declared a disaster area, then the homeowners and the business owners and the small farmers who were hit so hard here will be eligible for very low-cost extended loans so they can rebuild. But the state of Georgia can do nothing because the state of Georgia is broke, like so many states, especially here in the old Confederacy. Broke. No money. And no visible means of getting any revenue cranked up in the near future, the immediate future. Nobody knows when. So it wasn't that long ago, several months ago, as a matter of fact, when Sonny Perdue, being the Georgia rube that he is and being a typical Republican, he's not as caustic or acidic as some of these bastards, but he's you know, just a Georgia politician. It wasn't that long ago when Sonny Perdue was talking about, well, you know, all this money that President Obama wants to send in the stimulus bill, I don't think we need very much of it. Well, some of it has leaked through, and in and around Metro Atlanta, you can see signs that are up saying that this road project or this bridge project is being funded by federal stimulus money from, and then it names the act of 2009 where this money was appropriated. But Sonny Perdue begging for help from the federal government because the state of Georgia is flat ass broke. It's really something to see. You know what I'm saying? It's really something to see. There's still maybe 50,000 homes down here without electricity. And the thing about it, the storms themselves were not all that severe, but they were relentless. And it was a result of tremendous amounts of moisture moving into this area from the Gulf and the Atlantic. And the resulting, I'm not a meteorologist, but I certainly have been watching them on television. High pressure areas kind of pinched this enormous low pressure area over the southeast. And these thunderstorms and rainstorms just kept marching. It was like precision pounding this area. All of which is a result, of course, of global climate change. Georgia, North Georgia, the southeast for that matter, except in coastal areas, does not get flooded. It does not get flooded. It takes a hurricane, tropical storm that comes ashore. But rainstorms? So, no money. No money to help the citizens of the state of Georgia. So, Sonny Perdue goes begging. Got an email here. Got a couple. Here's one I'm going to read on the air regarding Bob Alexander's piece I just read last half hour regarding who they are, who controls everything, the corporatocracy. And this comes from Perry Two, who writes, they have learned from past mistakes. The ruling elites learned from the mistakes of their grandfathers. Name anything from the 30s. That was good for the people, but the undoing of the elites. And you will find that they have preempted it now. Organized farmers are gone. They control the entire food supply. Organized labor, entirely dead. And they control the zombie. Factories cannot be reopened. They made them go away. No strike will do anything but make things worse for us. The majority will give up all freedom for something to eat, and a warm place to sleep, and they have won. Yeah, but you know, you can always win a battle and lose a war, right? So we're not sure where all this is going to lead. But like Bob suggested, it all starts. I mean, if we ever get serious about wanting to turn things around, and we're not there yet. If we ever get serious, you know, the right wingers are in absolute panic mode, grabbing their guns, grabbing their crotches, running around like a bunch of kittens in a thunderstorm. I mean, it's just amazing to see, inspired by these raving lunatics that are on radio and television. normal people are trying to figure out what the hell is going on, how to stop this. Most of us are right on the verge of, if not panic, certainly deep and grave concern. But as Bob pointed out, we still haven't taken this seriously. Panic is not taking something seriously. The stress, anxiety, being freaked out is not taking something seriously. That's reacting to it, but it's not taking it seriously. And as Bob points out, if we want to take this situation seriously, it starts with a national strike. That's where it starts. Jesus Christ, we're almost there now with a real unemployment figure of around 20%. How many workers in this country, when you count everybody? 200 million? What's 20%? 4 million? 40 million? What is it? Yeah, 40 million. If 40 million people just stopped tomorrow, don't have to do anything, don't have to go anywhere, don't have to charter a bus, get on a plane, nothing. Just stop. Just stay home. Don't do anything. We can't even do that. Tom wrote in about Bob's piece and said, no, Bob's got it wrong. There's no corporatocracy. There's no they. It's us. Because we let this. We gave it away. They're both right, of course. They're both right. But we don't even have the presence or the courage. Is it courage? I don't know. What does it take to just say, okay, I can't afford to help charter a bus. I can't go to Washington. I don't like marches. I busted my ass during the 60s and 70s. I don't have the energy left for that anymore. I don't know what to do. I know the country is it just heading for a brick wall at 90 miles an hour. The politicians don't respond. The nutbags are all over radio and television. It's incredible. What can I do? Very simple. Nothing. Nothing. You don't have to do anything. Neither do I. We just stop. Now, I hope that that day will come. I hope there's somebody out there who understands the power of the tweet and the Twitter and the Facebook and MySpace and the internet and the web and cell phones and you know, everything, who will organize this. And if somebody does, all you and I have to do is nothing. Absolutely nothing. I know Bob Alexander's not going to organize it. He tried to organize an indictment of George W. Bush for murder. Sent out what? I've got the number wrong. I don't care. 2,700 copies of Vince Bugliosi's book on indicting George W. Bush for murder. Sent it to prosecutors all over the country in counties where at least one American had gone off in Bush's war and died. Murder. He got nothing. Nothing. He put in the labor, you people put in the money. Because it cost, I don't know what it cost, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $12,000, I think, to get the books. You got a reduced rate from the publisher. Mail them. He and Armenda and Jude and some of their friends worked their asses off to get these out. And what happened? What happened? Nothing. 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 That's how it goes. Oh,
to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It is 10 before the hour. Email from the Foxhole Atheists regarding a general strike in this country. Hi, Mike. One type of strike would only hurt corporate America. We must remember that corporate America got rich off of insurance and credit scams like balloon and arm loans. If we want to hurt these people, all we have to do is go on an insurance strike and credit revolt. If enough people cancel all their insurance, like auto and property, it would bankrupt the industry. If every liberal with good credit opened all available lines of credit, maxed them out without paying them, the whole oligarchy would crash. All we the people have to do is cancel insurance and go shopping. The best part is, if we all buy Made in America stuff, we would also stimulate our own economy. All right, now, Foxhole Atheists, I don't know how serious you're being, but I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of people sign up to max out their credit cards and not pay. I just don't. You know, a better deal would be to pay them off and cancel the goddamn things. But no, I get the point. I get the point. John in Lompoc, California. Regarding the terrorist training camps that is the raison d'etre. I watched a little bit of the Overman program tonight, and I saw, what's his name, not Overman, but his substitute, interviewing Jordan Sweigneur, and she pronounced that French phrase very succinctly, raison d'etre. D'être. Is that how you do it, Kathy? The raison d'être of our being in Afghanistan were the terrorist training camps, right? Isn't that why we invaded? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Isn't that why Barack Obama says we're going to continue to be there, right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. John Lompoc writes, Mike, why does everybody insist that attacking those responsible for 9/11 included bombing the terrorist training camps in Afghanistan? What kind of training did the so-called hijackers get in those camps? Were they even ever there? How many Afghanistan terror camp-trained terrorists attacked U.S. targets? When will the lie be exposed? John Lompoc. Yeah, I thought they got all their training in the United States at flight schools. Isn't that where they got, they were not, they all came into the country legally. These were not even illegal immigrants or aliens or visitors or, I don't know, their papers, so to speak. They're in good order. They came to this country. They hung out. They rented apartments. They got credit cards. They were bad Muslims because they apparently drank an awful lot of booze and went to strip clubs. And oh, well, what the hell? It's America. You know, it doesn't count. This is the sump hole of Satan. So anything we do here is ridiculous anyway, because we're all going to go to paradise. If you believe the official story, of course. But yeah, what training? What training? What training? You know, it's a good question, John, and for God's sake, in 9 years, 8 years, I haven't thought of that. What training did they get in the training camps? Never crossed my mind. The training was in where? It was in Florida and Minnesota and where else? California? That's where the training took place, didn't it? So what are we bombing? Well, I mean, what? What's the deal? Plus, when you add to that truism, the fact that 15 of the 19 were Saudis. They were Saudi citizens. They were Saudis. And we never deny Saudis. Well, we didn't then. Visas. Oh, my God, no. George Bush and his crime family may have gotten thoroughly pissed. Or his family, his real family, because they have been business partners with the Saudis and the bin Ladens for, oh, I don't know what, 30, 40 years? Jesus, we've been had, haven't we? Huh? We really, really have. Training camps. John questions the training camps in Afghanistan. What did they learn there? They learned how to shoot a Kalashnikov? Oh, really? Well, what about the training camps in, pick a country. Any place you have a U.S. presence, a military presence, you have training camps. People who, given an opportunity, will blow away the U.S. military. Yes, even in Germany and Japan and the U.K., yeah, even Italy, even in the friendly countries. There are people there who say, excuse me, this is 2009, you're still here, and the war ended in 1940, goddamn five? Oh, well. Training camps in Afghanistan. So that's what we're doing. We're pursuing. But I thought we'd gotten number two and number three and number four. We got the number two man of Al-Qaeda. How many times did we catch him? We caught him, what, five times, six times, seven times? We've killed him about four times. We've tortured him innumerable times. He's been dead, apparently resurrected, dead, resurrected, dead, resurrected. Not just the number two man, but number three. We killed him a few times, too. Maybe even number one. Isn't that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Wasn't he number one? Wasn't he the mastermind behind the 9/11 attack on the United States? Wasn't he? How many times did we kill him? Is he still dead or is he alive somewhere? Is he in Guantanamo or one of our other gulags? Where is he?
We captured the number three guy.
Oh, my God.
We caught the number three guy four times.
Don't you remember the news reports over the past four, five, 6 years? We caught the number three guy. How many times? How many times did we catch that slippery son of a bitch? We kept catching him and catching him and catching him until finally we thought, well, let's catch him and kill him. So we did that. But he escaped. We had to catch him and kill him again and again and again. So what are we doing in Afghanistan? Anybody know? No, I don't either. Training camps. Oh, well, they went to Afghanistan, Mike, to learn how to fly commercial jetliners. They did? They have those in Afghanistan? Oh, really? How much longer do we all buy into the lie? We'll be back. I got a picture here. I'll tell you what they were trained for. They were trained how to use monkey bars, right? How to swing around. Look at these guys, right? In the black outfits, swinging on monkey bars. Ah!
Has your computer been...
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Malloy program. And by the way, this portion of the Mike Malloy Show tonight is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. And by the way, tomorrow night... a guy named Penn, that's the name he goes by, is we're going to talk to him tomorrow evening during the first hour. And he's one of the people who produced this radio play, It's Up to Us Alone, starring Ed Asner. You know, we've been talking a bit on this program about the Justice Act that is a bill being introduced to replace or modify the USA Patriot Act. And we've talked a little bit about why we need to get it passed. Tomorrow night, we'll have on the air live Penn from the People's Email Network, one of the people fighting to actually make the Justice Act become law. If you want a preview, you can go to usalone.com. Look in the right column, and you'll find every conceivable option available to empower you and make it easier to speak out. There's action pages, there are phone actions, there's all kinds of stuff, and we'll talk about that tomorrow night with Penn. It'll be about 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And by the way, while you're there, you can reserve your free copy of the new radio piece play starring Ed Asner. It's free. Go to usalone.com. There's an audio link there, too, if you want to hear the first act of this radio play. It runs about 20 minutes. I listened to it earlier today. And if you like radio drama, a lot of people don't remember radio drama, real radio drama. I do. I guess if you're over a certain age, you remember that. But and if you don't remember it, it's a very involving form of theater, because it's the theater of the mind. You know, that's all radio, that kind of radio is. And if you have even a bit of understanding of the troubles between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and I use the word troubles in almost an ironic sense, you know my position on that issue. If you know a little bit of the history, the recent history, the past, just, you don't have to go back far, just the past 20 years, that's all you have to do, just an understanding, go back to the Reagan years, then this radio play will catch you immediately. I listened to it, and the first half. I haven't heard the second half yet, the second act. Anyway, one of the producers, a guy who calls himself Penn in L.A., lives in L.A., that's where this was produced. We'll be talking to him tomorrow. First half hour of the program. Stick around. Or come back. Or regarding a national strike, Matt suggests that it take place in Pittsburgh. Why not begin it there? You know, Pittsburgh, home of the Homestead Strike. Any of you remember the Homestead Strike? Well, not remember, but are you familiar with it? It goes back to 1890s. We mentioned this the other night about Pittsburgh. The police have sealed off the entire center of the city to insulate these global leaders that are meeting for this G20. Did it start today or does it start tomorrow? I guess tomorrow. 4,000 police, a National Guard battalion. Is it a battalion that is combat hardened, just back from Iraq? 11 Coast Guard vessels. On what? The Monongahela and the Allegheny Rivers? Is that they come together near Pittsburgh? 11 Coast Guard vessels are on standby in Pittsburgh. The city of Pittsburgh was chosen as the venue to showcase the recovery, you see, that the world is experiencing now. I think the only country that's really recovering is China, isn't it? Recovery from disused smokestack industries to high tech. Well, what's interesting, if you do have any knowledge of labor history, the Homestead Strike that occurred there in, if you want to read something very interesting, just go to Wikipedia and type in Homestead Strike. But it was one of the more intense and one of the largest confrontations between management and labor in the history of the country. It occurred at Carnegie Steel Company. It was between the Carnegie Steel Company, you know, Andrew Carnegie, the Scotsman who came over and owned the steel industry, and Iron and Steel Workers, the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers, who were referred to as AA. The problem arose when the company tried to force non-union contracts on everybody. Yeah, in the 1890s, they had contracts. The AA, the Iron and Steel Workers, were put together in 1876. So this event occurred in 1892. Now, way back then, 100 years ago, 100 plus, 120 years ago, the union negotiated national uniform wage scales on an annual basis. They had, you know, they sit down with Carnegie every year, work things out. They helped regularize working hours. They helped make regular the workload levels and how fast you had to work. They helped improve working conditions. And the union also acted as a hiring hall helping employers find these skilled workers. Well, that wasn't good enough for Carnegie Steel. I don't know if Andrew Carnegie, was he still alive then? I'm embarrassed to ask. But the management decided, well, screw the union. We've had enough union. And the result was about, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 people were killed. They had a private army that tried to take over, and it was run by Pinkertons. Yeah, those Pinkertons. That's what Blackwater was called all those years ago. Pinkertons, a different company. But I think the Pinkerton company sent 300 or 400 of their goons to break up the strike and put everybody back to work. But what they ran into was a crowd of thousands of men and women, thousands, who said, no, God damn it, no. And the strikers won. And I think three or four of them were put on trial for murder because several of the Pinkerton guards were killed in the gunfire. And they were all acquitted, obviously. So who are they? Well, there's one of the strike breakers who worked for Andrew Carnegie's steel companies, Pinkerton boys. The Pinkerton company was, didn't Henry Ford hire them too? So, Pittsburgh, where the Homestead strike occurred, and where the city is in virtual lockdown. My goodness. What else do we have here? One of Glenn Beck's acolytes was busy committing a murder in Kentucky. This is just from my perspective, and I'm probably right here. When this is figured out, unless it's covered up and ruled a suicide, right? The FBI is investigating. FBI doesn't investigate suicides, but the FBI is investigating the hanging death of a U.S. Census worker. His body was found near a Kentucky cemetery. And a law enforcement official told the Associated Press the word fed, as in federal, was scrawled on the dead man's chest. Fed, as in federal worker, as in those goddamn socialist communist Nazis that work for the Negro in the White House. And you know how the Republicans have been, especially the Republican maniacs on right-wing talk radio like Crazy Eyes Malkin and the Suicider and the Fat Man and all these people have been railing against people. Well, they're going to come out and take the census and then everything's going to be screwed up. Ah! And of course, Beck and O'Reilly are constantly promoting murder and destruction. They're waiting to click with one of their listeners who will make an attempt to murder the president. And either O'Reilly or Beck, I think it'd be Beck, finally clicked today or the other day and got one of their listeners to go out and kill a census taker.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. Yeah, so apparently one of Beck's listeners decided to kill a U.S. Census worker. The body of Bill Sparkman, a 51-year-old part-time census field worker and occasional teacher, was found last week in a remote patch of the Daniel Boone National Forest in southeast Kentucky. The Census Bureau, as a result of that killing, has suspended its door-to-door interviews in Clay County, rural Clay County, where the body was found. Investigators are trying to determine whether the motive was related to his government job or to an anti-government sentiment. Investigators are not saying a whole lot about the case. The law enforcement official, who is not authorized to discuss the case and asked for anonymity, said today that the man was found hanging from a tree, and the word "Fed" was written on his chest. The official didn't say what type of instrument was used to write the word. Jesus. FBI spokesman said the Bureau is helping state police with the case. The spokesman said, quote, our job is to determine if there was foul play involved, and that's part of the investigation, and if there was foul play involved, whether that is related to his employment as a census worker, end quote. Wow. But this is, you know, this is what they do. O'Reilly inspires people to go kill doctors who provide private abortion services, legal services to his patients. And then O'Reilly stands there with that dung-eating look on his face. What a son of a bitch he is. Oh, it wasn't me. I did, you know, blah, 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 blah. Of course it was you, you thug. And then the suicide-prone Glenn Beck rails against census workers and inspires his people to go out and kill one for sport. And I will guarantee you that O'Reilly and Beck and the rest of these monsters on the neo-fascist right in this country love this stuff. It gives him something else to talk about. It's sport. Setting people at each other's throats to these bastards is sport. That's all it is. Oh, my. Bruce writes in regarding the strike in the Homestead strike in Pittsburgh. All those years ago, Bruce writes, most people probably don't remember, but there was a nationwide farm strike in the mid-60s. Farm prices were at depression levels. It went on a couple of weeks, and the farmers won. But Lyndon Johnson got a federal judge to issue an injunction and threatened the strike leaders with prison. They never struck again. Now they, that Bob Alexander wrote about, own all the food. So as Bruce says, it would take more than a strike, because the they are in no way dependent on the economy or consumers or profits. This is the age of golden parachutes and too big to fail. And there's that martial law infrastructure that Bush put in place to consider. They made no secret of giving Kellogg Brown and Root $400 million to build more camps, and they still had the ones Reagan built after the Cuban boat lift. So don't plan, if you go on a strike, don't plan on sitting down in an intersection and thinking that they will wet their pants and give up the country that they stole fair and square. Bruce, no, of course not. No, you don't have to go to an intersection and sit down. Just do nothing. Just do nothing. Just stay home. Don't buy anything. Don't ring up a sale. Don't ring up a credit card. Don't do anything. That's all. Just don't turn on the television. Don't turn on radio. Just read a book. Listen to some good classical music or rap, or country, or rock. Well, you know, whatever you want to listen to. Take your dog for a walk. Hang out with your nieces and nephews. Spend some time with your kid. Screw it. Stay home. 40, 50 million people stay home. What? They're going to fire everybody? I don't think so. So I'm looking for a leader. How about you? I'd like to see somebody organize that. Everybody I know who's organized things have either burned out, given up, thrown in the towel. I mean, what's left to do? You know, the right-wingers are saying, well, you know, these commies are going to get your gun because these the liberal media and these socialist sons of bitches are going to try something. No, we're probably not. But it's a good suggestion, isn't it? Huh? Just strike. Huelga. Just do what Norma Rae said. You know, she held up that sign, union, only just change it to strike. Stop. Cease. Sit down. Take a break. Say no. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back. When we come back, we have a very short Kate Petrini report card. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
radio done right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. I think it's time for Kay Petrini's report card.
Your children well, 'cause their father's hell did slowly go by and feed them on your dreams.
The report card is brought to you by the Texas State Textbook Monopoly, bringing the nation the best in learning materials in all of the 6,000 years since creation. When in Dallas, drive by the textbook depository. From Kay. Hi, Mike. We were discussing the Pentagon Papers case in my government class today. When I had one of those duh moments, the subject was the inability of American troops to combat the guerrilla tactics of the Vietnamese. I asked my students the question, where else have we seen a case of a large military power being routed by a small rebel force? One of my students immediately answered, the American Revolution. Americans are notoriously clueless about world history, but when my student made that remark, it occurred to me that we don't have to look to the history of other nations to learn this lesson. We could simply examine what happened right here. In our own backyard. True, the Americans were helped greatly by the French during the Revolutionary War, but the sneak attacks that colonists successfully carried out against the British were due to the fact that they had home field advantage. And ultimately, the largest military power in the world at that time fell to so-called rabble in arms. How is it even possible that our leaders think things will be different this time? It's bad enough that we know practically nothing about the history of other parts of the world, nor do we give a damn, but most of us don't even understand the most fundamental facts of our own history. If we did, maybe we would stop the madness. Maybe. And on a related topic, when I heard Bob Alexander's piece on the profoundly retarded right wing in this country last week, I had to think of a remark I recently heard. Quote, I waited 1 month for an insurance authorization for a dental crown. I now need a root canal. I had several procedures with no relief. Natural childbirth pain was less painful. I'm warming up to this being normal. With Obama's health care reform, we'll all be in the denture line. End quote. The lack of logic here, Kay writes, is shocking. Especially because this is from an intelligent woman who also works as a medical professional. How is this possible? Has right-wing radio really eaten people's brains to this extent? K.
Slowly go by and feed them on your dreams.
K's report card is brought to you by the Texas State Textbook Monopoly, bringing the nation the best in learning materials in all of the 6,000 years of creation. When in Dallas, drive by the Texas School Book Depository.
So just look at them and sigh.
All right, it is, the night is getting on, isn't it? In a few minutes, we will invite your phone calls, if you are so inclined. This is New York. The story's from New York, but it could apply any place. Somebody has come up with a great idea. In this case, it happens to be Michael Bloomberg, the mayor, in his ever-expanding campaign to make New Yorkers eat better. Right? He's doing all kinds of things. He's clamped down on trans fats. He's sent fruit vendors to neighborhoods where that sort of thing, fresh fruit is not available. He's pushing corner bodegas to sell leafy green vegetables and low-fat milk, so on and so forth. Well, now he's got an even bigger idea. He wants supermarkets to go into areas where there is abject poverty, obesity, diabetes, under a proposal put forth by Bloomberg, I guess, the City Planning Commission unanimously approved today an ordinance where the city would offer zoning and tax incentives to spur the development of full-service grocery stores that devote a certain amount of space to fresh produce, meats, dairy, and other perishables. Now, the article goes on and on. It's in tomorrow's New York Times. But, I mean, think about it for a second, will you? Special tax abatements to get grocery stores to open, to get a grocery chain to open a grocery store in a poor neighborhood. It doesn't have to be New York. Hell, we see that right here in Metro Atlanta. Oh, my God. In some of the so-called inner city neighborhoods or the neighborhoods with high unemployment. There are no grocery stores. There are a lot of fast food joints. There are a lot of liquor stores. But there's not a single grocery store. Chain grocery store. Why not? Well, you know, this is a high crime area. Really? What do you think? Somebody's going to come in and steal your rutabagas? That's the excuse. Well, the insurance. It costs a lot for insurance. We can't do it. It's just unbelievable. Denying people access to the food available in a grocery chain. Now, let's not even get into the corporatizing of the food distribution in this country. I know. But people are eating junk when they don't have to. When you go into these little bodegas here in Metro Atlanta, Jesus God, I mean, a pound of tomatoes can cost you $4 when you figure it out. In a grocery chain, it costs, what? How much does it cost for a pound of tomatoes, Kathy? I should know. Hell, I do as much shopping as you do. $2.50 a pound, something? Buck and a quarter? So some genius now in the Bloomberg administration said, hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we see that the people in the outer boroughs or the inner boroughs in these high poverty areas that have access to real food? Yeah, somebody ought to think of that here in Atlanta or maybe in Milwaukee or in Detroit. I read something about Detroit the other day. In the entire city, are you hearing me? The entire city of Detroit, there is not one grocery chain outlet. Not one. Not one. When I see things like that, it staggers me. When I was a kid growing up, you know, we had A&P. I grew up in the Midwest. Kroger, A&P, Food Giant. Oh, my God. When Kathy was a kid growing up here in the South, they had Piggly Wiggly. What else did you have? You had A&P, Piggly Wiggly.
We had Food Giant, Colonial.
Colonial Foods, Winn-Dixie.
Winn-Dixie, Kroger.
Kroger.
Kroger when I was a kid.
Yeah. 5, 6, 7
Jewel
Food, 5, 6, 7 different chains. I can take you into sections of Atlanta that go on for miles. Nothing there except these hideous so-called convenience stores where you can go in and buy a 6-ounce bag of over-salted, over-fatted potato chips for $1.89. And I can show you mile after mile after mile of fast food joints and liquor stores and... So it's a radical idea. All of a sudden, it's a radical idea to make healthy food, and let's not get into the bioengineering, healthy food available to inner city, poverty-stricken, high rent, low income, whatever you want to call it, areas. One of the things that's cropping up in Atlanta that I think has already made an appearance in the so-called inner city neighborhoods, the inner city neighborhood that we go to, it's there, and that's these little where local backyard farmers, local people who are growing cabbages and lettuce and tomatoes and carrots and beans and also baking bread and putting together pastries, you know, little pies, sweet potato pies and things like that. And there's one not far from where we go to pick up Molly from preschool that or in kindergarten, that is open every Wednesday. And we've made it a habit to stop in there and buy tomatoes with spots on them. Yeah, spots on them. And God, do they taste good. And what did you buy? What is that? Yeah, we grow some too, of course. Of course we grow some. But ours, for some reason this year, are not doing very well. Maybe
the
it's
birds
the,
ate them.
The birds, and maybe it's the rain. But what's that leafy green stuff you, arugula, that stuff that you and Barack
basil.
Obama eat. And basil, homegrown basil, you know. So
honey. We have honey from local honey gatherers, beekeepers.
Beekeepers, yeah. Yeah, whatever they're called. Which is pretty amazing, because there was a period here back in the spring where we were told that the bee population was dead and nobody's garden could be fertilized, and I think it was partly true. But all right, so from the corporate food distribution system to little neighborhood growers, either way, you know, isn't it time to make sure that folks have access to food?
Liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Who made me judge and jury hear it?
It's about 10 before the hour. During the break, coming up here at the top of the hour, we're going to open up the phones and like to hear from you. The number is 877-996-2556. All right, Prairie 2 sent us a economic affairs report. I think it was yesterday or the day before. We never got to it. So we're going to get to it now. And it's the subject is to build a house of cards, you need a solid foundation. Prairie 2 writes, yet another risk analyst has come out with a list of bad banks. Their list is almost 2,300 banks in the F category, as in failure. These banks that are considered likely to fail hold $4.5 trillion in assets. So far, the FDIC has had to pay an average of 25% to cover deposits. So you're looking at over $1 trillion for this estimate, assuming things don't get worse. $1 trillion that the FDIC has to cover. Congress has given the FDIC $500 billion line of credit. And of course, Congress can print as much money as they want. How this gets paid back is another matter. On the too big to fail list are four U.S. companies, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo and Company. They now have 46% of the assets of all FDIC-insured banks, up from 38% a year ago. Nine more banks control another 40% of assets and would also likely be on the too big to fail list. The Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, the FCIC, held its first meeting last week, 4 months after being created by Congress. They did little at the first meeting but give speeches about their own importance. Nothing of substance. Don't hold your breath for anything to come of this committee, unlike the PCORA hearings of the 1930s that produced the reforms that could have prevented the current crisis had they remained in place. Besides the slow and inauspicious start under the rules supplied by Congress, besides that slow start, the minority Republicans on the committee, appointed by the Republican leadership, must approve all subpoenas. Oh, my God. That will guarantee that no stone will remain unturned. The stones will be turned in a mixer with Portland cement and carefully guarded until all the facts are encased in hardened concrete, forever covering up who was to blame and what their real motive was. This will provide a solid base upon which a tissue of lies will be used to construct a new house of cards, obscuring the continuing decline of our civilization until it's too late. Chipping away to get to the truth. at prairie2.com. Oh, my God. The Republicans on this committee called the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission must approve all the subpoenas issued. Well, my goodness, that's exactly how it was when the Republicans were in control, right? The Democrat, oh, that's right. When the Republicans were in control, there were no hearings that required subpoenas because there were no hearings about anything. About anything. I'm just hung up on the story that this census taker was murdered by a Glenn Beck listener. What? I'm jumping to conclusions? Please. Please. This is what the right-wing crazies have been screaming about. That's their new thing. The census takers are really what? They're going to pump poison gas into your house when you open the door? They're going to put the mark of the beast on your child's forehead? They're really secret Nazi agents working for that communist in the White House who was really born where? Kenya? Alaska? Where? Where was he born? Siberia? These right-wing crazy people have been pounding this and pounding this and pounding this. So doctors are shot. People who visit the Holocaust Museum in New York or Washington take the risk of being gunned down. But a security guard takes the bullet instead. The census worker is found hanged in the forest. Man. And the Becks and the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the crazy-eyed Michelle Malkins and the Bill O'Reillys and the rest of these thugs, they laugh because it's sport. It's great fun. Oh, look at our power. God damn, I didn't know we had listeners in Kentucky. Yeah, got that census taker. Did you read about it? Yeah, I read about it. What about my guy? Went into the Holocaust Museum, you know? He was going to take out a bunch of them, but the goddamn security guard got in the way, so all he could get was the security guard. Oh, well, next time. Whose guy was it that blew up the Murrah Federal Building? Who? Oh, that was Limbaugh's boy. That's right. That was Limbaugh's boy. Okay. Well, he's, you know, Limbaugh's got the he's got the trophy right now for causing the most death in the United States, where it concerns inspiring one of your listeners. But you know what? I think Beck is going to overtake that. I really do. I've got a lot of hope for Glenn Beck. I think he's going to pull a stunt that's going to result in hundreds, if not thousands, of people dying. Yeah. This situation in Kentucky with the census taker? Just a beginning. Just an attempt to see how quickly someone responds when the chain is tugged. Well, what, you don't agree with that? What would inspire someone to murder a census worker and carve into their chest, "Fed"? Huh? What would inspire that? All right, your phone calls when we come back. The number again is 877-996-2556. Join us if you dare. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Malloy program. As far as the census taker in Kentucky who has been hanged by, and I'm very certain it'll be a Beck disciple or Hannity, and as far as Rush Limbaugh in inspiring the Murrah building bombing, Timothy McVeigh, McVeigh more or less talked about that before he was executed. And then there's Jim Atkinson. Remember him, the man accused of killing two churchgoers in Knoxville, Tennessee, at the Universalist Unitarian Church? Remember? He said he was motivated by what he called the liberal movement. He left a four-page letter in his car after the attack. And in his home, when police went to his home, they found right-wing political books, brass knuckles, empty shotgun shell boxes, and yada, 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 yada. But they also found, according to Channel 10 in Knoxville, Tennessee, they found the book Liberalism is a Mental Health Disorder by Michael Savage, Let Freedom Ring by Sean Hannity, The O'Reilly Factor by Bill O'Reilly. All these books that advocate that liberalism is somehow a disease or something bad, something needs to be eradicated. These guys, and again, these guys don't care. You know, the Hannitys, the Savages, the Becks, these bastards don't care. They find it to be like sport. Now, as far as the church that he went into to kill people, the police chief said, quote, "It appears that church has received some publicity regarding its liberal stance." Well, I hope to shout, it's a Unitarian Universalist church. They don't preach some kind of bloody Christian dogma at all. The church where this thug went into, inspired by right-wing talk radio, has a gays welcome sign and regularly runs announcements in their bulletin about meetings of the parents, friends, and family of lesbians and gays, for example. The church's website stated that it worked for desegregation, racial harmony, fair wages, women's rights, gay rights since the 50s. And that, you see, is the type of place that Savage and O'Reilly and Hannity and Beck send their killers to commit murder. No question. Paul is in Long Island, New York, listening on Sirius. Paul, welcome to the program.
Welcome, Mike. But I must tell you, I think that you sound like a buffoon, and you also are irresponsible.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What's a buffoon?
I listen to Rush. There's that one time in his show that he does anything.
No, wait a second. What's a buffoon?
A buffoon is somebody who states that somebody is motivated by murder by a talk show. That's insane. That's like,
well, then I guess you would consider the chief of police in Tennessee, in this town, in Knoxville, to be a buffoon, right?
He might be. He might very well be. I don't know. I don't know the guy.
Well, let me ask you something. What would it take to convince you that a steady diet of hate speech, coast to coast, border to border, 24/7, by these people? Hold on a second. By the Limbaughs and the Becks and O'Reillys. I don't know what you would call hate speech, but I think we're in most of the country, not you obviously, most of the country is pretty much in general agreement that what they're doing is hate speech. I mean, people are showing up at Obama speeches with goddamn guns.
Hey.
But a steady diet, no, hold on. A steady diet of hate speech, don't you think that it might inspire somebody to commit an act of violence?
No, and what I will tell you is this, liberalism...
All right, now you're not going to tell me. Go away. Jesus Christ, I can't stand I can't stand people like you. I really can't. Do you remember when Michael Reagan told his listeners to go kill protesters? Remember when he talked about putting hand grenades up the asses of children if they were Muslim? Get off my radio program, you freak, and don't ever call me again. Goddamn morons. No. I'm not going to talk to people like that. I'll talk to them for about 40 seconds, but that's it. Because that kind of ignorance or duplicity or whatever it is, it's befouls the air in my little studio here, and I just, no, I'm not interested. Go away. Go away. Seriously, go away. TJ is in, oh, good God, TJ, I can't take your call. Not with that kind of noise. We'll try again. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina, listening on Sirius. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, man, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. I understand your state no longer leads the United States in drought.
That's a terrible thing to say.
They led the Southeast in drought for the last 4 to 5 years. Now they're not terrible.
Yeah, that's true. We don't have a drought now. No.
I was there the other day, man, coming down 20th. And you couldn't see the ground where Six Flags was. You know, wow.
No, Six the big roller coaster at Six Flags. It was so deep in water. It looked like the Loch Ness monster. You know, swimming through with those humps. You know, right?
Exactly. Man, this guy Glenn Beck, and I can't believe Katie Couric is getting him time on her show. It just made me sick when I saw that.
Who did? Now say it again. I'm sorry.
CBS Evening News, Katie Couric was interviewing this clown.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it's like she's giving him some kind of 20 minutes of fame on her program, you know.
Yeah, Glenn Beck has made the cut. Glenn Beck is an American superstar. Glenn Beck walks on water. Glenn Beck has the wings of an angel. Glenn Beck breathes the rarefied air that the common folk like you and I will never even touch, much less get a chance to breathe. Glenn Beck is God. You didn't know that?
He's the most evil, most dangerous man in this country right now.
Oh, you don't think he is an exalted being? He's made the cut. Everybody knows his name. Everybody talks about him. We talk about him on this program. Everybody talks about him. And you know, in the American culture, if nobody's talking about you, you're dead meat. You don't exist. Glenn Beck is one of the sons of God now, if not the son of God. He is the perfect human being. He's for justice and peace and righteousness and law and order and love and family and
You know, they all of them guys on that side get over and they scream Acorn all day long.
Oh, sure.
The evil powers of Acorn, what Acorn is doing to the nation. Acorn takes they're hired by the government to take census. So you can look for some Acorn people to be hung from trees.
Yeah.
You can look for this to happen, you know. When that Mar building in Oklahoma came down, Rush Limbaugh was backpedaling so fast he could have beat that kid across the...
Oh, sure. Sure. These guys inspire this kind of violence. It's just like, Arnold, thank you. It's just like in the old days, the bad old days, you know, in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. But in the bad old, recent bad old days, when you would get these white citizens councils in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia and North Carolina and all over the South, and they'd get up there and they'd preach, and they would never say the N-word. No, they would just talk about, well, you know, the coloreds are going to do this. And they would preach this hate. And what would happen when the meeting was over? Well, a gang of these yahoos would go out and find a black man or a black woman and lynch him. And then, of course, the white preachers and the white rabble-rousers and the white Glenn Becks from 30, 40, 50 years ago. No, me? Oh, not me! I never told anybody to go, murder one of them, people. You know, not me. And then next week they do it all over again. Dirty bastards.
We'll be right back.
It is 21 past the hour. Is this Wednesday? This is Wednesday. A week from tonight, I'll be in San Francisco at Yoshi's Club and doing a gig for Green 960, our affiliate station in San Francisco. Really looking forward to this. So come on by. Go to green960.com. Excuse me, green960.com. The website, and you find out how to get tickets. I think there are tickets left. Maybe not. Check it out, green960.com. And I'm looking forward to seeing all the folks in San Francisco. So come on by. Do it. All right, where are we? Kevin is calling from... are you calling from Long Island?
No, I was actually raised in Long Island. I moved there when I was 6 years old from North Carolina, Mike.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I can't believe I'm speaking to Mike Malloy. Anyway, that guy from who claims he's from Long Island.
Yeah.
I've been dealing with that basically growing up. When it was time for me to move out of my mother's house, I tried to find a studio apartment. And the cheapest one I could find was $1,500, no utility included, the first month's rent and security in advance. Mm-hmm. You know, these people have no idea what we go through. I actually had to join the Army because I didn't want to stay home and be a leech on my parents. And when I was over there, these people are just ruining this country. I was one of those guys kicking in doors 2-3 in the morning over in Baghdad, and it just seemed more like a distraction for the country to, you know, like tell the citizens that we're over there actually looking for something. It didn't really seem like we were actually doing anything but terrorizing Iraqis, and this whole thing's just seems like one big lie. You know what I mean?
Expand on that a little bit. What seems like one big lie? You mean what we're all going through right now, or what? Tell me.
Yeah, this whole government, just not to be one of those conspiracy theories or whatever, but it just, this whole political game just seems like one big distraction for everything. Like, I've tried not to look at the whole New World Order thing because that just seems a little crazy to me, but. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to figure out what the hell is going on. You know what I mean?
I'm not sure. Do you mean what's going on where it concerns the Obama administration? Do you mean where it concerns these right-wing crazies that are out here on media all the time? What do you mean?
Exactly. Like how do they get people to vote against their best interests? Like, I just don't get it, man.
Oh, so you're talking about the influence that these right wingers have, the ones on radio and TV, Bex and Limbaugh's and people like that.
Yeah, like these snobs that come up from Florida and stay the summer in Long Island.
Right.
They just have this kind of attitude about them, you know, that I'm better than you type of attitude. It's sickening, man. It's sickening.
Are you you were in what, the Army or the Marine Corps?
I was in the Army.
And how long have you been home?
I've been home for about 3 years now.
Do you still owe the Army any more time?
No, I do not. I'm actually post-traumatic stress. I can't go back.
Are you like going to the VA for treatment or medication, or are you seeing anybody about that?
I actually go to the VA and I go for like counseling and stuff like that, just to. The more I talk about it, the more it helps with, like, you know, like I stop having nightmares and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? But the more I talk about it, the more it helps. And I just don't get how they actually have people, you know, who will never experience war saying, okay, you know, well, I support the troops. If you support the troops, you would bring them home because you really don't know what we go through over there. It is hell.
I want to ask you something about anger. Do you still feel anger from all this, or is it something else? Is it something besides anger?
I still feel anger. At first, it was towards the individual who actually, like, put us through the stress and everything, but, like, the insurgent, as they say, but as time went on and I got back and I started to, you know, like looking into more of the alternative media, I started to see what was really going on. Like, okay, this is just one big game, because I mean, I thought I was over there, like actually trying to track down someone who had information on Al-Qaeda in Iraq. But no, that's not what it was. We were basically over there trying to catch the guys who were trying to, you know, do things to the oil stuff like that.
Hey, can you hold on a second, Kevin?
All right.
Yeah, hold on, because I like to talk to you a little bit more. Can you do that? All right, can you hold on?
Yes, sir.
All right, man, let me put you on hold. I'll come back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Why are we all fighting? Oh, why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, this is the Malloy Show. We're talking with Kevin, who is Long Island native and was in Iraq, been home for about 3 years. You mentioned that you've been diagnosed with PTSD, right? Who gave you that diagnosis, Kevin?
Actually, I had a captain come tell me.
Really?
But.
While you were still overseas, or when you came home?
When I came home. Well, what happened was I got called back, and I told them, you know, like, I'm not going back, you know. So. I went through the whole, you know, like, diagnosis thing.
And, right.
You know, they classified me as PTSD. But it's crazy because my grandmother is from the Shinnecock Reservation out in Long Island. She begged me not to go into the Army. You know what I mean? Like, they've just done us so wrong. You know, she was like, don't fight for this country. It's okay to love the country, but don't kill yourself for this country. And I just wish I would have listened to it, you know what I mean?
Sure. Do you feel this is kind of a stupid question, I guess. Let me rephrase it. How do you feel about what you were told when you joined up and what actually happened? You started to touch on that before the break. What's your take? How is it different now from what it was when you first, you know, decided to join the military?
How is what different now?
How is your attitude about the mission, such as it was in Iraq, and maybe even of what's your take on Afghanistan? How has your attitude changed about sending people like you to go overseas and kill folks?
I feel like I don't want to say like it's one big lie, but I feel like it's one big lie. Like it's something that's going on other than young guys, you know, some of them 18, 19, 20 and up going over there, kicking in doors. That kicking in doors and actually looking for people just seemed like it was a distraction. And what really got me PO'd is when I heard those big corporate executives for the oil companies were going over there to close deal on the oil. That's what really, really pissed me off. You know what I like? Like, I actually had to take a day off of work. It smelled so much, and I'm like, I had friends die for this, you know, like guys that I would sit down and eat lunch with every day are no longer here because of greedy bastards like that. You know what I mean?
Sure. I do know what you mean. Although, yeah. Although I have not had the firsthand frontline experience that you have had. I mean, you know, I've been back here ever since Bush invaded Iraq. Bush won. I mean, you know, I'm talking about going back to 92 since the first invasion. You know, I don't think anybody would argue, Kevin, that Saddam Hussein was a real class A bastard. He really was. And his people should have overthrown him, but his people couldn't because we kept sanctions on him and we made it impossible for them to rise up and get rid of him. And back in the 80s, I'm sure you know this, back in the 80s, we supported him. I mean, it was our weapons and poison gas and all this other stuff that we were giving him when he was fighting against the Iranians, you know, the Iraq-Iran war back in the early 80s. So it must have been hell for you to come to that realization. And I don't know when you did or under what circumstances, but come to the realization that you really weren't fighting for mom and apple pie and freedom. And, you know, you were fighting for corporate America. That must have been hell, partner.
Especially when I first found out, like, I was only born in 83. So when I first found out about, you know, the whole, you know, first Iraq thing, I was kind of young.
Right.
My father was actually in the reserves, and he would kind of watch the news every day to try to figure out, you know, if he had to go over there and everything. He was really nervous, and I, like, really couldn't, like, figure out, like, okay, I know they say he tried to invade another country, but why would they go over there and hurt other people? Because this one, it's weird because I find out it's not the citizens of the country that are like, necessarily doing bad. It's the people who run the country, that little percentage who caused all of this damn damage to the world, who are basically ruining the world with wars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little percentage, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, and yet, all these civilians have to die.
Exactly, and I can't figure it out. Why the hell would you want to vote against your best? It's not in the country's best interest to be at war, especially now when we're like basically been dead broke for a long time. Let's face it.
What are you doing now? Are you working now? Have you? Are you doing all right? What?
I'm actually a truck driver now because there are no more jobs, and I have to stay out for 4 weeks before I can go home, so I don't get a chance to see my kids. And they're actually young right now, like 1 and 3. And when I come home, they kind of treat me like a stranger. And by the time I'm ready to leave, they're just kind of getting used to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's just one big cycle.
You, when you say you're out for 4 weeks, you mean you do long distance driving?
Right. Because that's basically the only thing that's available right now.
Mm-hmm. How are you feeling? All right, you do therapy. You must not do it like every week if you're out all the time.
Right. Well, I've actually gotten a whole lot better about it. But when I first started, every little piece of trash in the road, every carcass, you know, I'm thinking IED. You know what I mean? Like still, when I do get a chance to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, decide to go to the mall or something. I can't stand their garbage can. It just racks my nerves. I cannot stand their garbage can.
Well, I really respect you that you, I know a lot of guys in the military tend not to want to, you know, do therapy or whatever because, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, therapy is seen as some kind of weakness or something. I really respect you that you, you know, you didn't buy into that nonsense and you got some help. Because I know a lot of, have you been reading about all the veterans that commit suicide, all the veterans that are homeless, all the veterans that can't find work? I mean, I'm sure you're aware of that, right?
Right. I actually had a buddy who still lived in New York, and he was going to therapy, and actually, like, what was this? May 24th, Sunday morning, he was actually murdered at the Hampton Bays Deli. And, you know, so that's, that just brought back the whole, you know, that bad feeling, just, you know, like the world is bad. But, you know, my wife actually talked me into, you know, like staying in therapy, going when I can, because it actually does help, and it actually helps my marriage and my relationship, actually.
Well, Kevin, I'm glad you called. I hope you check in once in a while. I know on the road, you know, you probably are pretty busy and everything. But if you listen on XM, you know, anytime you want to, man, just call in. You know, just check in with us and you know, tell us what's going on. A lot of people listen to this program appreciate hearing the kind of stories or experiences that you've had and how you've made it back. You know, because there's a lot of guys who are having a real difficult time making it back. So it's good to hear from somebody who is who's doing what you're doing. I really appreciate you calling in, Kevin. Okay.
Yeah, like I actually don't listen to anything else from 9 to 12. I used to listen to music, but now I'm hooked on this show. So
all right.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, Kevin. Drive safely. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you checking in. Have I got time for an email here? This is from Sarah up in North Carolina. Writes, my husband worked briefly for the census last spring. They called him back for training last week, and due to the escalating craziness in this country, I was relieved that he would only be going to businesses like nursing homes and institutions rather than private homes. This week, he went in for a week of training. But yesterday, after 2 days, they let him go, saying his hair was too long, but didn't ask him to cut it. He was told it took people with long hair two-thirds longer to get the needed information, but I suspected it was because he looks like a handsome 6'2 American Indian, although he's actually quarter English, quarter Filipino, and half Irish. And I figured with the recent Acorn crap, they just wanted white Americans to do the census. In his class of 26, there was only one black, a woman. We were both pissed off as he needed the work, but now after hearing about the death of that census worker, I'm relieved he no longer has that job. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen.
It's more Mike Mullen.
It's 10 before the hour. Ben Birch is our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy handles military affairs. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs. Kay Petrini, education affairs. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, this program's ethics advisors, and the program is engineered and produced by Kathy Bay. Don't forget, a week from tonight in San Francisco at Yoshi's, be there, be there, be there, be there, be there. When does that start? 7:30? Go to green960.com to get all the information you could possibly want, and I'll see you there. I'm really looking forward to this. We always have a great time in San Francisco. Johnny is in Loma Linda, California. Hey, Johnny.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
No, I'm a psychotherapist, Christian business owner. And, you know, I listened to that call. I wasn't able to hear Kevin because I guess I can't I'm on the hold. I can't hear everything, but I was listening to the caller before, the right wing guy, you know, that calls you a buffoon or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I recognize that. I kind of was a victim of that propaganda back in the 80s. I used to jokingly call myself a right wing social worker. I'm a clinical social worker, you know.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm sickened that I ever said that, because I'm not really a big labor union guy. You know, I'm not really really big on entitlements, you know. But other than that, you know, I'm just sickened by the right wing, and I just realized that they must have had some sort of plan, because it was total propaganda since the 80s, all over the radio, and people are completely brainwashed by it. It's just ridiculous. And I know you think Christians look crazy, but I can see why, because these people, what they do and say in the name of God is ridiculous, these Christians, so-called Republican Christians. I'm actually even running a rock opera about it. It's called Sabbath for Sodom, but I'm running an opera about this whole religious wackiness that just gives God a bad name. But anyway, I just really love hearing you, man, and the whole station, and it's just inspiring, and it just makes me sick. And I even have friends who are... We have dinner parties, and they're wacko. They're completely brainwashed. It's sick, and I love the way you're stepping up against it. And I'm glad that the left is stepping up in the media. You know, like even Ed Schultz is amazing what he's doing there. You know, but I'm really happy with what you're doing, and I just think it's really cool. And I've been a victim of the whole thing myself. I used to think I was kind of right wing, but I'm totally not. But when you think about it, it's just these people are completely ignorant idiots.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they completely, like, don't realize they're being manipulated by the corporation concepts, you know?
Right.
Corporation folks. It's just ridiculous. I'm just so glad to hear you stepping up against it, you know?
Well, thanks. Thanks, Johnny. I appreciate your comments and also appreciate you calling in. When you get the rock opera finished, send me an email. I'd love to listen to it, get a copy of it. Thanks, Johnny. Appreciate it. James is in Grants Pass, Oregon. Hey, James.
Hey, Mike, and one driver to another. Kevin, we're all here for you. You know, just hang tough. You're going to make it. It's going to be all right. But what I really wanted to mention was I've been listening to you for a couple of years now, and I haven't found one right-wing nut job that lasts more than 30 seconds with you. What they need to know is, you know, if you ask these right-wing nut jobs a question, you know, they should answer it. If they don't know the answer, they should say, well, I don't know, instead of spouting off some Rush Limbaugh-approved talking point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, come on, guys, get with it. I would love, just once, I've been listening to you for about, a little over 3 years now, and I would just love to hear one person from the right wing call in and actually give a decent discussion that lasts for 30 seconds.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing this for about 20-some years, James, and I swear to God, in the last 15, I've been looking for the same thing, a caller who is either identifies himself or you can tell by his rhetoric that he's from the hard right, the neocon right, just be able to, not just put a thought together, but Jesus God, just put a sentence together. And you know, I've made myself so clear so many times with these people that, you know, if you want to call the program, go ahead. But if you can't answer a simple question, if you can't state your case clearly, or if you start attacking me, like I attack Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and these people all the time. But if I were to call their program, I would not come across with the kind of garbage mouth that I come across when I'm not talking to them. I would probably try to engage them in a conversation, and that's all I ask these people to do. I don't care what they say about me when they're not calling in. But when people call in, you know, make your case. Say something substantive. Present a point of view that makes sense. And they can't do it. They just can't do it. So you and I may be waiting for something that's just not going to happen.
Oh, boy. I have a couple of friends on the right, and I can't seem, you know, we actually sit down and actually have conversations, and sometimes, you know, every rarely now and again, but I mean, I don't know what's happened to people anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, everybody's in their own little bubble.
Well, I think the right wingers are, and I think that bubble is just abject hideous fear. I don't think people like you or me or Kevin or most of the people listening to this program or progressives in general or liberals, I don't think we're in a bubble. I think we look at these right-wingers who are in a bubble, who just are constantly whining and bitching and striking out and telling lies. I doubt seriously, I don't know you, James, but I doubt seriously if when you sit down to have a discussion with somebody, you start out by telling lies, which is exactly what Hannity and Beck and Limbaugh and Fox News, all of it, and O'Reilly, it's all lies. So, I would disagree that everybody's in a bubble. I think if people like you and I are in a bubble, is to get away from the garbage that these thugs are throwing. Hey, listen, man, I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in, James. Drive safely. All right? Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night. All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.